Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Troubleshooting and Problem Determination. My name is Joseph Lam, and today's session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for today. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Application Server Troubleshooting and Problem Determination. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us via email. After that, we will open the lines for a live Q&A session. Finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session given by our panel of experts. Going on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce you to our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Vikram Torendru from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hello everyone, good morning.
Next, we have Ajit Jariwala from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi, this is Ajit, and good morning, everyone.
Then we have David Tyler from WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Support.
Hi, everyone. Good morning.
Then we have Kumaran Ayakuti from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi, I'm Kumaran Ayakuti.
Next, we have Paza Momedi from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi there. This is Paza here. Good morning, everyone.
Then we have Paul Bullis from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support. Then we have AJ Balodia from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hello, everyone.
And finally, we have Ramakrishna Boyagrabu from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. This is Rama.
All right, so let's get started by moving on to slide number 4. Before we get to the question and answer session, we would like to give you a technical overview of the topic from Pada, one of our panel experts for today. Please go ahead, Pada.
Good morning, everyone. Again, this is Pada here, one of the panelists. As most of us may be aware about this topic, since we all of us use WebSphere Application Server every day in our day-to-day activities, the basic troubleshooting and problem determination of application server is a pretty wide and broad topic that spreads across all the tasks that we do as WebSphere administrators or users in our everyday usage of the product in setting up the infrastructure in our respective companies. Starting from the issues faced during the installation or migrating a new or an existing environment to the administration or tuning the product, and also its interaction with external resource servers like databases or messaging engines, and also the issues like hangs, crashes, and out-of-memory errors that we see every day with the product, depending on how we are using it at a point of time. Joseph, can we go to slide number 5 now? So the basic troubleshooting starts by looking at any known issues once we come across a problem, either by searching the existing product info centers or IBM support websites or internet. And if you come across any known fix or a fix pack that addresses the issue that you are currently facing, most of the people, they implement the fixes or apply the fix packs to see if that resolves the problem. And if no further information is found regarding the problem, or if it looks like it's not any kind of a known issue, you can go to the support website and look at various must gather URLs that we have published online, or the tech notes that are available, which give more information about capturing the traces or further steps to debug a particular problem. And you can always come back to IBM support and open a PMR to work with us to resolve the issue. With this, we'll go to the next slides where we can address some of the questions we have to start the conversation, and then later we can take the open questions to move forward. Let's go to the next slide then.
Thanks, Pada. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us ahead of time before the webcast. I will now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts.
What tools are available to help troubleshoot WebSphere problems, and what types of problems can be analyzed with these tools? For the purposes of this presentation, I provided a link in the references section that will include some of the answers that we'll go over here. But with the release of IBM Support Assistant, we now have a central location where clients can go to download tools related to products that they use. And for this troubleshooting session, that would be WebSphere App Server. So within the WebSphere App Server tools that are provided in IBM Support Assistant, that would be Pattern Modeling and Analysis Tool, PMAT, and that's a garbage collection tool. We also have another garbage collection tool that's available called IBM Monitoring and Diagnostic Tools for Java, which it's just a difference of flavor. So some of the graphing of the heap usage shows some of the same information as PMAT, so you can try either one of those with any kind of native standard error logs from your WebSphere app server if you have Verbose GC enabled. These tools help you look at garbage collection times, whether or not garbage collection is occurring too frequently, and also just general heap usage over time, so it's a very valuable tool. Another tool included with IBM Support Assistant that was a flavor of tool was mentioned was Heap Analyzer. That's not available within IBM Support Assistant yet, but another heap analysis tool, MDD4J, is. And it allows you to import one of your heap dumps or a heap dump generated from an out-of-memory condition or even if it was a user-generated heap dump. And it'll do some analysis for you, helping you identify maybe a leak container if there's a potential memory leak. You can also look at the numbers of objects in the heap if you're focusing in on something very specific. And it'll have different reports and analysis that's generated. The next tool that I'd like to touch on is Log Analyzer, and this is useful for especially new customers to WebSphere who are trying to look at all of our various logs in a single view, because what you can do is import all of your app server logs, so your system error, system out, the native logs, and what it does is it correlates them into one single view that you can then filter on for various errors. You can look at symptom databases based on different errors and load and download different symptom libraries. So it's useful, again, for being able to filter out a lot of logs without having to manually go through each one of those in your favorite text editor. And then finally, we have a tool called IBM Thread and Monitor Dump Analyzer for Java, which allows you to look at the Java cores that are generated by the JDK, import those in, and if you have a series of Java cores, for example, to diagnose a hang issue, what you can do is look at those over a period of time to see which threads are moving, because you might have some threads in the app server that are moving and some that aren't. And this will allow you to easily identify those, look at the stacks of the code being executed, and help you diagnose further then onto what you need to focus on for that particular hang issue.
So moving on to slide number 7, question number 2.
This is Partha here again. So the question is, how do I troubleshoot an application server startup issue? It may not be just an application server. The basic of any server that like a deployment manager or a node agent or an application server, we have a big set of problems that we see every day with respect to server startup issues, like any of these servers. Some of the main problems include like port conflicts or any kind of misconfiguration in the JVM parameters or a kind of corrupted WebSphere configuration files, like files becoming 0 bytes due to some mismanagement or some accidents happen, like crash of hard disks or anything like that. So debugging these kind of problems include looking at the existing logs to see if you get any clues about the problem behavior, like system out or system error or native logs. And sometimes if it is a very basic problem with a JVM misconfiguration, you may not even see that a system out log file will even be generated during those problem occurrences. So you should get a clue from one of these native logs and see, go and look into the server.xml file of the server, which is located deep down in the config directory of the configuration, and see if there are any new JVM parameters that are added there that can cause this problem, and try to take it out and test it again to see if that will fix the problem. If you don't have any clue about the problem, you can go for some extra tracing that can be enabled by looking at either the must gathers or by adding a star dot equals trace string in the server.xml file, because most of the times when the server is not startable, you may not be able to log into the admin console. And also you can try to start up the server with the minus trace option using the start server command. That might even produce some extra information to debug this particular kind of a problem. With this, I want to give the session to one of the other panelists, Kumaran, who might want to talk further on this. Kumaran, do you want to take it forward?
Thanks, Partha. This is Kumaran again. Good morning, everyone. As Partha said, it's first thing to look at is systemout.log file or startserver.log file. So whenever you experience any start server problem, it start with use the command line to diagnose the issue. It will be easier, and you should be able to collect some trace and log, and easier to diagnose the issue. So when you say start server space server name with minus trace, it will generate something into start server log file. If there will be two JVM actually will be used during the start server process. One is the launcher. When you say start server, that's a launcher JVM, which is actually going to launch the actual JVM. So the issue might be with the launcher JVM or with the actual JVM. If nothing is generated in the system out or any other log file, then it means there is something wrong with the start server launcher JVM itself. So what you can also do is you can say start server space server name minus script. That will generate a script file, and you can use that script to start the server. You can skip the launcher JVM there. And also, if you have issue with from the console, maybe we have to look into the log at dmanager and node agent as well. It may not be there in the actual app server log file. And also, sometimes we may have issue with the top server as well. And we may have to do the same, like by passing minus trace option. And with the security enabled, you have to pass the user ID and password to stop the server. But during the start, you don't have to pass the user ID and password. If you do it from the console or from WSAdmin or from the command line, if with the security enabled, the user has to have operator or admin privileges. If you have any questions related to this start server, probably you can ask once we are done with all these questions. Thanks. Now I can pass it on to question number 3.
Hi, this is Dave Tyler. I'll be answering question number 3. The question is, what best practices should I follow to avoid problems with database connection pooling, and how should I troubleshoot connection pool problems when they do occur? So, as you can imagine, there are a wide variety of problems that can occur with database connectivity and connection pooling. So, I'm going to focus on two of the most common types of problems. One of them is stale connection issues. So that's when a connection is in the connection pool and becomes invalidated, usually because it's either closed on the database side or on the network, such as when a firewall drops a connection. And the other type of problem is connection wait timeouts, which occur when the connection pool is at its maximum size and all of the connections are in use. And then when the application tries to get more connections, it will wait to get a free connection and eventually time out with a connection wait timeout exception. So to avoid problems, there are a few things that I would recommend in the configuration and also in your application code. In the connection pool configuration, one of the settings that I always recommend is to set the minimum connection pool size to 0, and that will help to avoid stale connection issues. The reason for that is that if the minimum connection pool size is 1 or greater, then WebSphere will be unable to clean up the one or more connections that must remain in the free pool, and the connection will stick around until eventually it does get closed, either on the network or on the database side. For the maximum connection pool size, I recommend that you do significant load testing and use the Tivoli Performance Viewer to monitor the connection pool during your load testing to come up with the appropriate maximum number of connections that you'll need based on the expected load of the application. A couple other properties that I recommend are setting the purge policy to entire pool. That's actually the default, but some people do change it. The options there are either entire pool or only. When you set the purge policy to entire pool, then all of the connections in the pool will get purged when a failed connection exception or other fatal connection error occurs. And I also recommend setting the unused timeout to a value less than whatever the timeout setting on the firewall is in order to ensure that WebSphere is able to clean up its connections before the firewall drops them. In the application code, I recommend that, for one thing, to avoid problems with fail connection exceptions, you should always catch the fail connection exception when you get a connection from the pool. And when it occurs, you should retry the get connection call. The reason for that is that when a fail connection exception occurs, the connection pool is purged as per the purge policy. And if you retry the connection after the connection pool is purged, we'll build a fresh new connection and return it to the application, and it should succeed. I also recommend making sure that you close every connection object that the connection or that the application uses, and I recommend doing that in a finally block, because if you close it in a finally block, if there's an exception that occurs in the application, the connection will always be closed, and that'll help you to avoid problems with connection leaks and the pool running out of free connections. And finally, I recommend that you avoid using shareable connections in a long-running servlet. The reason for that is because a servlet is when you invoke a servlet and enter a service method, we start what's called a local transaction containment. And shareable connections in a local transaction containment will not return to the free pool until the local transaction ends. And so in a long-running servlet, those connections could be held up for a long time if you're using shareable connections. So I would recommend using unshareable connections in a long-running servlet application. And finally, to troubleshoot problems, what we normally ask for in support is a J2C connection pooling trace. You can find instructions for that in our connection pooling must gather on our support website. And there are a variety of things we look for in the trace. If you have specific questions about that, you can answer during the free question and answer period. If you're unable to enable a trace, perhaps if it's on a production environment, there is a WS admin command called show pool contents that's very useful to show us how many connections are currently in use and what state they're in. Finally, we do have many technical documents, including a troubleshooting document for connection pooling that you'll find on our support site that show you how you can avoid and resolve common problems, and that's a great reference as well. I'll turn it over now to question number 4 on slide 9.
Hi, question number 4. How do we debug a node synchronization issue? The first thing we should do that we need to ensure the basics. We need to ensure that the queue manager and the node agent are communicating over the TCP/IP. If the communication is not there, then first thing we need to engage a network admin to troubleshoot that. Once we fix that, then we should look into the D-manager, the system out.log, make sure that the file transfer application is running. Then third things we want to do is if you're in the admin console and if one of the nodes says unknown status, it most likely the problem not with the synchronization, but the problem with the discovery. That indicates that node agent and a D-manager is not being discovered, and that's where the problems lie. Other part of the synchronization, there are various ways you can run the synchronization. Obviously, one, using the admin console, WSAdmin, and using the sync node. If you're having a problem with the synchronization, I would suggest try running the command line, make sure that the D manager is running, and then go into the each node and issue stop the node agent, and then run the sync node from the command line and see if that synchronized. If you are able to run successfully, then probably the configurations between the deployment manager and a node is properly synchronized. I'm going to turn over to one of my colleagues, Vikram. He can add more stuff onto it.
Yeah. Hi, this is Vikram Tomendro. I would like to add, you know, to the same topic about this synchronization. Whenever you see any kind of with any kind of problems with the synchronization, yeah, basically we would say like that the problem is with the synchronization is very, very important. The piece of component anytime whenever you want to perform any kind of new administration, either from the administrative console or using the WS admin scripting tool, you want to make sure synchronization is working fine. If you have the problem with the synchronization, that may not stop your application servers or applications, you know, or not working, but, you know, your applications will be working fine. You won't be having any problem with your running application server or running application. The only problem would be you cannot perform any kind of new changes or new administration activity from the administrative console or using WS admin tool. Especially if you want to like deploy some new application or update some new application, yeah, you need to make sure synchronization is working fine. Otherwise, the application deploy or application update operation goes fine only to the master configuration level, which is deployment manager, but the changes will not propagate to the app server nodes, which means your application servers will not be knowing anything about the new changes of your application code. So you want to make sure, you know, the synchronization is working fine. I would recommend, you know, you can go out into the administrative console before you do like application update or application deployment. If you go into the system administration tab in the console and click on node agents, and you will see the nodes. I would recommend nodes tab so that you can check the status of that node. If it says like not synchronized, I would recommend go ahead and, you know, perform the full resynchronization from the same admin console page and make sure that synchronization is working fine, and you will see the right status in the console. Then you can proceed, you know, deploying your application or making any new configuration changes using one of the administrative tools such as console or WS admin tool. As Aziz said, like, you know, if you have any problems, you can try, you know, running this full resynchronization from the console, or you can run the sync node command line script from the each app server node bin directory. That will force making sure all the files are synced up from the master configuration to the app server node configuration. And also, we do have, like, you know, there is a must gather link out there in the WebSphere support site, as well as a couple of references, like, you know, problem determination of the tech node, as well as troubleshooting docs, as well as there are a couple of other tech nodes available. It talks about more about synchronization, how internally it works, and how it calculates whenever you make some changes to the each file level or to the folder level. So I would recommend everyone, yeah, please go out into our support site. You will find like maybe like 3 to 4 different tech nodes, you know, for the synchronization process, which talks about more in detail how this process works and, you know, what you can do, and if you see the problem, you know, what steps you can take, you can apply before opening a PMR with IBM support. With this, I'm turning over to the next panelist for the next question.
Basically, for out-of-memory errors, there are two parts to out-of-memory. One is the Java heap that can exhaust the memory, and the other is the native memory. Native memory is mainly used by native code like C or JDBC drivers or JNDI code. And the Java heap is used by the applications that run on the application server. So there are two parts to the debugging for the OOM errors. One is the native memory and the other is the Java heap. To debug the native memory, the best thing to do would be to enable malloc tracing, and that can be done by determining what native code is having that problem. The second part is how to debug the Java heap that runs out of memory. And we have two very good tools that are available on our website for performing out-of-memory analysis. One is called the Pattern Matching Analysis Tool. That is available on our website, and it is very useful to debug issues that occur with the garbage collection activity that is part of the Java heap. And this part of the tool analyzes the output of the verbose GC and gives a graphical view of the layout of the heap in terms of what time was spent doing the verbose GC. The second tool is mainly available, which is called the Heap Analyzer. And this Heap Analyzer is used to analyze heap dumps that are also a representation of the Java heap. So basically, when you have a heap dump, you can use the Heap Analyzer to analyze the contents of the heap. and it too gives you a graphical representation of the object and how much space they actually occupy on the heap. This is very good to debug issues where you have certain part of the code that's leaking memory, and it gives you a good representation of how much data that object is using at that particular instance in time. I will now go on to slide number 11, question number 6. The question is, I'm interested in application server hangs. What causes it and how to mitigate it? So there are basically three parts to this question. First is the hang, second is what causes the hang, and the third is how to mitigate it. So a hang is basically when your application server stops responding to requests and no users are being served. It may start responding after a certain amount of time or hang permanently, in which case you'll need to restart the server. So we'll go through the causes of the hang. Most of the hangs that we see, and as strange as it may sound, are not related to the app server code. However, app server is where the symptoms show up and is not necessarily the source of the problem. The app server is the place where the symptom usually shows up. And there are three main causes that I would like to talk about today for a hang. The first is basically make sure the recent changes that have taken place on the system are valid. And this is one of the main causes that we have observed from debugging. The changes that occur on system do cause hang. And one of the main changes on the system is related to the application. So new applications being deployed must be verified and validated to make sure there are no problems with that. The second cause of the hang that we have seen is due to database bottlenecks. And problems at the DB end can increase the number of concurrent users accessing the database, which in turn leads to not enough connections being available and ultimately hangs the server. So make sure there are no problems at the database end, which is causing any bottleneck for any app server requests that are piling up. And third, one of the causes is not enough resources on the system. A system that does not have enough physical memory, for example, will cause paging to occur, which will cause a slowness that will trigger a hang. Also, overloading a system with more capacity than it can handle will cause a hang. So these are three main causes of the hang. First is at the application level, make sure the code that has changed is working and validated. The second is the database bottlenecks, and the third is not having enough system resources that your application server requires. How to mitigate the hang? First and easiest part is to make sure and look at the obvious things as we just talked in the causes, to make sure the recent changes that have been implemented on the system are valid at the application level and also at the OS level. The second is to check for any problems that may occur at the DB end. And the third, which is the most reliable way of determining what is causing a hang, is by taking a thread dump and taking multiple thread dumps and looking at the stacks of all the running threads that are part of the app server process. If the thread stack allows you to compare, you know, the running threads, so take all the running threads that are part of your Java thread dump and compare that running thread to the next thread dump that you've taken, and if the state remains same, more than likely that part of the code is having some problems and causing a hang. So thread dumps is one of the most useful and reliable source of determining what is causing a hang. Four is obviously collecting all the data that is necessary for our must gather documentation that is available on the website. And we have some documents on how to determine step by step in terms of going through the thread dump. So I'll now pass it on to Joseph for the next part of the presentation.
Thank you again to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point, Marla, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chuck Chen. Your line is open, sir.
Yeah, actually I have two questions. The first one is related to question four, non-synchronization. If I understand correctly, non-synchronization only sync up a configuration file under config/sales. So what if my application code is out of sync? Application code, which I mean under installed apps. So if I found that, for example, the application code on the node side is corrupted or need to be refreshed, how do I initiate a synchronization from deployment manager to the node?
Hi, this is Ajit. And to answer this question, basically, once you deploy an application, by default, there's a synchronization interval is 1 minute, and you could synchronize using the console, or some reason the deployed application is not been extracted under install add, then you can try to stop the node agent and try running the sync node from the command line and see if that's synchronized. If you are having problems, then possible there's some might be disk space issue or maybe some file system inode problems or things like that, you know. And if you're not able to resolve it, I would suggest enable the admin equal all on a DManager process and a node agent process. So we can try to look at the node agent log, see whether the year extract been called or not, and see if there are any exceptions or any track in the logs.
So are you suggesting that by syncing up nodes, you also replicate application code?
That replicate, I mean, basically expands into the install app, but the configurations only get synchronized in a config folder.
Okay, I'll double check that.
I will have my colleague also answer that question for you. His name is Kumran.
Hey, this is Kumaran. So when you deploy an application, first it's going to store on your DManager config.
Mm-hmm.
When you click on save, it is just going to stay on DManager. And when you do a sync from a console or from a command line, it's going to go into your node. First, it's going to go into your config cell on the node. It's not going to go to installed app. So it will update in server index.xml file. It will put an entry saying this application is deployed on this server. And also the config files will be pushed to the node config cell level. So on the node agent, there will be a listener running all the time. We'll be looking for any change of that application folder in the node side.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever there is any change, the listener can see, okay, there is some change in the config cell folder on the cell application folder on the node side. So it will grab that application and try to expand it into your installed apps folder. So whenever the sync happens, so the expansion should take place automatically. If it does not happen, then there is some issue. So most likely you have to enable the tracing on the node agent, and you have to enable com.ibm.ws.management tracing. If it is not expanding, it could be because of file permission issue, or as Ajit said, it could be a face issue, or it can be something else. So you have to enable tracing to determine what caused that problem. Did I answer your question?
So make sure I understand you correctly. So by pushing up the sync at bottom or do a sync node, the ear file or any deployment artifact actually gets distributed to the nodes under the application folder or directory on config, and it is the node that is responsible for expanding the ear file to the install app.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the node agent is responsible to expand the application in the installed apps folder. Suppose if you are on a production system and you want your application to go into installed apps and you can't wait for IBM to open a PMR or diagnose the issue, there is a tool called EAR Expander tool. You can use the tool to expand the EAR file under the installed apps and you can start the application, so it should start. And we can diagnose the issue, why it caused the problem. We have seen some issues. Sometimes it might get expanded on one node and it might not on other nodes. So until we have the trace, there is no way we can say what caused this problem. So the first thing to check is under your node config folder, the application folder, to see if the application is there on the node side, and check the server index.xml file as well and see if that application entry is there in the server index.xml file. If those two entries are there in the node side, which means the application has been synchronized but not expanded on the installed apps folder.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I have the second question?
Yes, sure.
It's related to question number six, application hands. I noticed that if I have a database connected to, normally I see like a hand thread. Once I fix the database, will the hand thread go away, or I have to restart the app server to recover from that?
Okay, it depends on what kind of error was there from the database. If there was a failed connection exception, you know, that was causing the server to hang, then that failed connection exception should recover without recycling the application.
Okay, so I won't be too concerned because the hand thread happens on web container, well, from experience. So you're suggesting that once I fix the database issue and the connection pool gets working properly, and those hand thread or web container thread will go away or it will, you know, recycle itself?
This is David Tyler. Are you talking about a web container thread that's waiting for a free connection?
Yes.
Okay.
It looks like that, yeah.
So that thread will continue to wait for a connection either until it receives one or until the connection timeout number of seconds is reached, which by default is 180 seconds. And then, you know, it would time out after that amount of time. But we do see a lot of cases where actually all of the web container threads are waiting for a free connection, typically when there's a connection leak in the application. So that would cause an application server hang. And sometimes if you get into that scenario, the only way to get out of it would be to restart the application server.
Okay, so in other words, if I see one of two hand thread on web container, I won't be too concerned because they'll be reclaimed by WebSphere. If all the web container threads were hung, then I have to restart the app server.
Right, and okay. You probably want to look at more than just one thread dump, because the thread dump is only basically one snapshot in time. So you might have a thread that's waiting for a free connection, and then 5 seconds later, it gets that connection. So if you have multiple thread dumps, you can compare, you know, different points in time and tell if the thread is waiting for the connection for a long period of time, and that would be a better indication of a problem than just looking at it in one thread dump.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for the answer.
Bharat Nara, your line is open.
Hi, Ajit. My name is Bharat. Actually, I have a strange question for you. My application is a JD Edwards application, which is running on iSeries AS400 server. So I have a problem here, like the Java heap size, the initial was set to 660 and the maximum was set to 0. I don't know why the IBM have recommended like that, unlike the traditional Java heap size. So it was set all like that and it is in the production environment. And a couple of times the server have been crashed just because it is using a lot of memory space. Is there any way out that we can reduce that thing?
First part of the question was somebody had recommended a heap setting of minimum size to 0 and a maximum to 768. Is that correct?
Yes. No, not really like that. When it was set, like it was starting with the 256 and a maximum of 0.
Okay, so yeah, definitely that's a setting that we do not recommend. We need to work on why that was done in the first place. But basically, a general guiding point for setting the heaps on both AIX and Windows and Linux is starting with a minimum heap of about a quarter of your maximum heap and then letting it expand to the maximum size as needed based on the application usage.
Okay, but on my server, it's like, you know, the minimum was set to 660 and the maximum was set to 0. And now it's taking something around 10 gig of Java heap size. And ultimately, at one point of time, the server crashes.
Okay. Is it a 64-bit hardware or 32-bit hardware?
It's a 32-bit, I guess.
Okay. I'm surprised why it is going to 10 gig because the process size is limited to 2 gig only. But in any case, what I would recommend doing is enable verbose GC and use the PMAT tool that was posted in the same time chart earlier and find out what is the maximum heap usage during peak load, and try to set you configure your max heap size maybe 30% higher than the max usage.
Okay, and this application won't use much users, like, you know, hardly there are 62 users altogether using, and
okay.
Like only 20 of them may be using concurrently. So
okay.
There is not much load coming from the application, but I don't know why it's going beyond 14 and 15 gig of Java heap size.
Yeah, that's very strange, and definitely I would recommend enabling the Verbose GC to start with and start tracking Verbose GC maybe once in a week or once in a couple of days. Try to analyze the data, and if you see like it is going way beyond the limits, I think you should take an action, probably limit the maximum heap, or if you need further assistance, open a PMR and work with the support team.
Yeah, I already did that, but okay, thanks anyhow. I'll just get in contact with you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Our next question comes from Ravi Kumar Kata.
This is Ravi, and I have a question about this heap usage. Is there a command that we can run from command line to find out what is the native memory and heap memory usage?
There's no such command that you can type to just get the amount of memory, but VMstat pretty much gives you a good indication of the memory usage on the system. And for looking at the heap memory, the best way to look at that is opening up your Verbose GC output that is logged into native standard error or native standard out, depending on your OS. And that gives you an idea, or that gives you actually an exact number on the amount of heap usage that is being taken at that particular instance in time.
Okay. And sometimes I use this PMAP command. Any idea what we get from that? It uses the total usage, right, including the native as well as heap.
Yes, that would be the total memory usage on the system, and part of the memory usage is given to Java, so Java is a process that's running on the system, so that's included in the output that is given by that.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Jesse Sick from Nationwide, may I ask a question?
Hi, I'd like to know the difference between the agent timeout on the data source and the transaction timeout under the container services, transaction service, and the relationship between the two.
This is Dave Tyler. I'll answer that question. So your question is about the difference between the age timeout that you can set in a data source connection pool and the WebSphere transaction timeout?
Correct.
Is that right? Okay.
Yep.
They're actually quite different. The age timeout for the connection pool is similar to the unused timeout in that it cleans up connections that are in the free pool. So those are connections that have been closed by the application and are now in the free pool where another request can come and get those connections. The difference between the unused and aged timeout is that the unused timeout is the number of seconds since the connection has returned to the free pool that can go by before that connection is basically discarded from the connection pool. The aged timeout doesn't take into account how recently the connection was used. So say, for example, the connection was created at 12 o'clock and the aged timeout is set for 5 minutes. Every time the connection is used and then returned to the free pool, what Webster will do is check to see if the age timeout has expired, and that's the amount of time since the connection was first created. Once that age timeout has expired, then the next time the WebSphere pool maintenance thread, which is sometimes called the Reaper thread, the next time that thread runs, it'll clean up the connection. The transaction timeout, the other part of your question, that's something different. That's any time a global transaction is started in WebSphere, either a container-managed transaction, which would be started automatically when you invoke an EJB method, or when the application starts a global transaction with the user transaction interface. Anytime you have a global transaction, the transaction timeout will time out the transaction after it's been running for a certain amount of time. By default, it's 2 minutes. And then if the transaction goes past the transaction timeout number of seconds, then the transaction will roll back. So the H timeout and the transaction timeout are not very related, but I hope that I've explained what each of them accomplish.
Sure, thanks. And I have another question. You explained about the malloc tracing. So how do we enable the malloc tracing, and where would we get that log file or whatever? Where do we see it?
Malloc tracing is basically, you know, it's just a malloc command. Malloc debug is one of the options that would specify at the Java level, and also the corresponding malloc tracing or the malloc command will need to be done on the native code that is actually leaking the memory. So it's a two-part thing. One is we'll be setting it at the application server level, and the corresponding change will also need to be done on the native code side.
So is there a way that we can set it on the console? So where do we set that?
That is given as a Java command line argument, basically malloc debug. It's an entry that we give up.
Oh, okay. Command line. Okay.
Yeah.
JB Miranda, you may ask your question.
Hi, my name is Anwender from Lowe's Company. I have a two-fold question. We have a WebSphere virtual environment, like a VE or XD, whatever you call it, in our environment, and I have an ANT task for application deployment. For now, right, I'm timing out each time taken for each task. After we got the XD in there, it's taking about 3 minutes for syncing each node. And what used to take 10 minutes for the entire deployment now takes about 40 minutes. And I don't know where the bottleneck is. And this is what I have done so far. From the WS admin prompt, I try to do a cluster, get a cluster MBean. It just takes forever to get that. And it's almost like 3 minutes to just get some object, some MBean. Anyway, so I'm timing out each task that I'm doing in there. It's just taking enormous amount of time, and I would like to see if I can enable tracing to see what is going on within it. Where is the bottleneck here?
Yeah, this is Vikram. Just to answer your question, yeah, definitely it's very hard to say now what's going on during that process, but we would definitely like to see the log files with some trace enabled. So yeah, there is a trace out there for WSAdmin scripting tool. And on the deployment manager, we need to isolate which command is taking more time, whether it is taking more time between WSAdmin tool to the deployment manager, or between deployment manager to the node agent process during the sync, or maybe in some other place. So we need to isolate that, you know, the specific command which is taking more time, again, between if it is the WSAdmin or deployment manager or D-manager and the node agent process. So I would recommend enabling the trace on WSAdmin scripting tool, D-manager, as well as node agent process at the same time. I would recommend, you know, by default, in the WSAdmin.properties file, there is a trace setting out there. By default, it is commented, so we need to uncomment that line for the WSAdmin trace, for the WSAdmin scripting tool. On the D-manager side, I would recommend the management trace. It's a com.ibm.ws.management.*all. The same thing I would recommend for node agent process also. So that after getting the logs, once the problem is reproduced, yeah, we need to see, you know, which command is taking more time, whether it's consuming more time between the WSAdmin D-manager process or maybe the D-manager and the node agent process. Yeah, on the phone, it's very hard to predict, you know, what could be causing the delay. But yeah, sometimes we do see the problems, especially when querying the cluster MBean or app server MBean. Especially when you have very huge topology, like, you know, a lot of clusters, a lot of app servers. It depends on the command that we are executing to get the cluster MBean. So we need to see the Jaeger script or Jython script that you are executing, as well as the log file.
But I do. I mean, I'm capturing a time taken for each task. So I do know exactly where the bottlenecks are. So you would recommend opening a PMR with the tracing enabled?
Right. If you don't have one, work on it, yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
because it's a performance issue, right? If it's like, you know, failing somewhere, you know, we might, you know, get something maybe like, you know, based on the exception, but it's taking more time. So we definitely need to look at the log file.
Right. And how much WebSphere extended deployment plays into this?
It depends. Are you, like, you know, whatever the command you are running, that requires your XD components involvement, or it's just, you know, basic?
No, it's basic. I mean, it's still application deployment, but only thing is XD is running. So the XD does, like, for example, you have application placement controller, health controller running. So you might just run into each other. Reason being, you can't stop an application because somebody else is monitoring that. In a sense, APC does some actions on it. There might be some pending tasks.
Right, yeah, again, it's, you know, the XD might be causing or may not be causing, so, you know, unless we look at the log file, because whichever, the code is taking more time, so we need to, you know, look into that code. If it's XD, the part of the XD product, yeah, maybe that could be, you know, from the XD product. If not,
okay.
Yeah.
Command-wise, I mean, there's still the simple WS admin task, there's nothing...
Yeah, not the command. When you execute that command, the code which is, you know, running or executing.
What would be the overhead of creating multiple core groups? I mean, instead of, let's say I have two core groups, what is the overhead of creating one more core group?
I'm passing this over to my colleague, David.
Hi, this is David Tyler. So your question is about creating two core groups and what would be the overhead?
Just quick overview of our topology. Right now I have three nodes and about 65 JVMs in there.
Okay, and they're all in one core group right now?
I mean, we started with WebSphere, so WebSphere default 6.1, so it created everything in default core group.
Right.
After we got XD in there, we changed it to 2, and we didn't pick any coordinators or anything like that. It was all just running it wherever it can find it. So we didn't pick any coordinators in there. And I want to change that from 2 to 3.
Okay.
And I just want to understand what's the overhead of it. Is it? I know that right now, once I divide my core groups into three core groups, right, I will have 25 members in each core group.
I'm not sure how much additional overhead there would be. I mean, I know that as a general recommendation, we recommend avoiding core groups with more than 50 members, just because each member has to establish a connection to every other member, so that it can fail over services that are running on any of them.
Are you also planning to build the core group bridges or just splitting
I did do the core group bridges now. So I have dedicated core group bridges.
Okay. I think there is no hard limit of number of core groups you can have, but if you are going to have core group bridges to bridge all the core groups together, I think you need to be a little careful. I would not recommend going more than 10 core group bridges in one environment, which is a very high number. Does it answer your question?
Yes, I mean, in the sense, we got XD in our environment about 6 months ago, and it's just been, we just started with two core groups, and we went to that portal, IBM Impact, and some people were saying it's not 50 anymore, it is 25 members with XD involved. So there are some conflicting things. I mean, when WebSphere 6.1 was released, everything, the hard rule was 50 members. If you reach more than 50, you need to have multiple core groups. Now that number seems to have changed from 50 to 25.
This is Paul Bose. Some of the reason for that change is XD uses the bulletin board, which is shared around the core group, and to pass more data than just the standard WebSphere ND. So the 25 limit, you know, if that came from the XD team, then I would follow that. So if you're planning on splitting it up into three for that reason and not just because for, you know, any kind of management reason or however else you're managing your environment, then, yeah, as long as you do just like you did when you went from one to two and you add that third core group in, you add the bridges in, that will save you a lot of problems down the road, especially the bridges are very vital because... especially if you're using clusters, your workload management, you can have problems if your client application is running in one core group and your server application is running in the other. So if you are going to move to the third one, make sure you add the bridges as you did before and make sure that all three core groups are bridged together, not just core group 1 to core group 2 and 2 to 3.
I think that right now, according to IBM documentation, it looks like they want us to use the core group split.py Jython script, the core group split.py, and that seems to kind of include all the best practices.
Okay, yeah, and that's great if you have something like that. If you're doing it by hand, then obviously you'd have to think about all those different variables. But from an overhead standpoint, by reducing the amount of members in that core group, you should be better off.
And that'd be all for me. Thanks.
Joseph Brasher, your line is open.
I think I got some of my question answered, actually. There's in the properties files, you can turn on WSAdmin trace. I just wanted to post, we install WAS binaries basically on file systems, and we've noticed the pretty big degradation when we go from SAN to a NAS. Just even doing a basic WSAdmin command, sourcing a Jackal file, just to add like a vhost entry and delete it, I'm noticing like 46% difference in time to completion. I'm wondering, is that normal, or and if not, what steps should I start taking to collect data to figure out what the problem is?
Hi, this is Paul Bullis. I saw the part of your question with the link about the difference between SAN and NAS performance was posted. Just in general, though, when you're doing any kind of or trying to diagnose any kind of performance operation within the same server within AIX, I know when I was in AIX support, what we typically would do would use the time command and try file copy operations to and from that drive. So taking WebSphere completely out of the picture, just to see what the difference in performance would be going from one of the drives in the system to one of the network drives. And then comparing the performance, making sure you're using a file of the same size. If you're getting good or similar performance there and you're still seeing a difference, then it's time to move up the ladder and start diagnosing, like you said, or like you mentioned, WSAdmin by enabling the trace and within that trace seeing the times and seeing where your delay actually occurs. We have a tool that is good for any time you're debugging a performance problem in WebSphere and you're using one of our traces. You can use this tool to really look at any type of log file and get timing so that you don't have to go line by line yourself and you know, calculate each timestamp and figure out, you know, where the delay is. It's called IBM Trace and Request Analyzer, and we'll try to get a link posted into the meeting there. But what you can do is you can load up any one of these traces that you generate, and it will identify gaps or time gaps in that trace based on the format of the timestamp. And WSAdmin's timestamp's a little different than the system out, system error logs and trace logs and WAS. But from that point, then you could find out where the big gaps are, go look at what that line was doing prior to that gap, and see if it's something doing one of these Jackal commands, or if it was actually something where we're copying a file over the file system. Now it's hard to know without having all the WebSphere code in front of you which one of our Jackal commands is actually doing a file operation at that time, which is why I still recommend trying just the easy file copy test first with the time command, just to get your baseline. That way you know for sure whether or not there's some kind of IO issue before you even apply Java on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been told by the performance group that was done, but I can reiterate that again. I guess a follow-up question is, I know NQ cares on what storage it's installed on. Does WebSphere, like the JVM and WAS binaries, care what underlying storage system it's on, be it NAS, SAN, local disk?
From a performance standpoint, yes, obviously, it matters on whether you're running off an NFS drive or NAS or SAN or whether you're running on a local partition. What we generally see more at support, other than just performance and I/O problems, and we definitely get those that come in where we have I/O issues and we're debugging a performance problem, but what we generally see more of is the file system having more issues related to either file permissions. So if NFS mount or NAS mount or SAN mount was done over a mount point that didn't have the correct directory permissions, we see things related to logs not being able to be created, different files or temp files being able to create, things like that more affecting it than the general performance of it. But I/O does come into play, and we definitely have a team who can use all the tools available to us and available to you through the operating system to help diagnose us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being told that the guys tested IO, they got like a gigabit, you know, it's pretty fast going in the IO. But I can definitely...
The file check is easy. It's a real quick thing to do.
I think that was done already, but I'll verify that again.
Make sure you're coming from a local partition or local drive to the network drive and not from network to network or anything strange like that, because some of those operations are just moving file descriptors and things like that and not actually copying anything.
Well, everything in our... that I tried to explain is that when we install WebServe, we don't install it on anything on local. So we would have, let's say, an NFS drive. We would just dump it right on there. So we'd be using the local, obviously the local memory and the local CPU. But all of the storage and all the files are actually over the network.
And then, obviously, the next step after that, if that's determined to be that that's the case and you look at the WSAB and nothing's jumping out, there's, you know, engaging IBM support we can definitely work with.
Yeah. Yep.
And as a SAN vendor and all that, and get everybody together and try to figure it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time and must conclude the question and answer session. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Pata for a summary of today's session.
Yeah, I hope we all had an informative session regarding various topics in WebSphere troubleshooting and problem determination today, and I believe some of the information that we learned during this session will be helpful for us in debugging or resolving any of the similar issues that we might face while administering the product in our future days. If you have any further questions or concerns regarding this, you can always contact your IBM account representatives or support teams in order to move forward on this. Have a nice day.
At this time, we will conclude the OpenMind session.